Can you hear me? It's all good? All right, excellent. Thanks for coming to our session. My name is... I'm speaking, guys. My name is Vakhtang Satrian. I'm Asia Time Zone Communications TSP Lead, part of Microsoft Worldwide Productivity Team. We speak about security a lot, and security very frequently now comes up in the conversations when we talk with our customers about Link. So we thought it would be a good idea to come to take it and present you what we think about security, what our concepts are, and some approaches, how we address those security concerns of our customers. So our agenda would be to have a chat about motivations, what does it mean when we talk about Link Secure by Design, and what we actually mean by that. And we'll have a look at the day in the life of a Link user, because anything Link user does, sign up, sending IM messages, placing a voice and video calls, everything you do security is part of that. So we'll just go through quickly through some of these elements. Interestingly enough, usually security session takes, well, my presentation's around 90 minutes to 2 hours. Now I have got 60 minutes, right? So a little bit of housekeeping. I've cut a little bit those presentations, and if you download the presentation file, you'll see a lot of additional documents, additional pages, which is part of this presentation. Feel free to use those pages for your internal purposes if you're presenting to your customer. And I'll probably ask you to let's keep the session going and keep the questions till the end of the session, right? So I'm trying to give you as much as content as I can today. Also, I would like to say it's good to participate in the questions, because thanks to Plantronics, they are our partners, and there's a lot of giveaways I have to give. So the deal is, if you ask a very good questions, we give you giveaways, and if you ask us a question that we can't answer, I double the giveaways, okay? So here's a deal for you guys. So, talking about the motivations, very often when we talk about Link with our customers, company security policy becomes a kind of a big, in some cases, a showstopper. It becomes a kind of a very long discussion, what we deploy, how we deploy, why we deploy. And especially it is a very big case if we haven't been engaged with security guys from the day one. Usually, it's kind of very common practice. We get security guys into our conversations only when we already sign up, we sold the Link, and now we have to deploy, and suddenly those guys appear in the rooms and say, no, you can't deploy it, right? So our really important case, and this is my personal message to you guys, would be, please, include the security guys and network guys as quickly as you can into your conversations, because whatever Link does, it is always travels across the network, it travels between the various areas inside the network, transit zones, DMZs, and everywhere that whatever is happening, security guys needs to be aware, right? Get these guys across. And it's very interestingly, whenever you speak with security people, it is a conversation going to the point, well, what do these guys do? It's not a question then they are here to disable Link. No, they really need to make sure that whatever applications you bring into the business, it is actually working properly, it delivers the standards and delivers all the concerns they have, they define in their policy, and they kind of need to really balance it between the security in the business and balance between what I have to give away to make sure business can operate. Very common questions we really ask, can your Link address my security policy? What should I do with Link to make sure it comply with my security policy? And I usually will say, it's a kind of the different questions we need to ask and different conversations we need to have with security people. In fact, is how can I help you? How can I explain to you how Link actually can address your security concerns, and how Link actually will be complied with your security policy. And fundamentally, it's kind of the moment will come when you will say, well, maybe it's a time for you to review the security policy. How up to date is your security policy? Has been you last time looking into the update 5 years ago, 6 years ago, right? So this is the kind of conversations we would like to have with security people. I know they're not easy, They're very, very tough conversations. And I usually say, if you started dealing with the security departments and network guys, you can't solve this within one or two meetings. I usually say you need at least five meetings to have a chat, to get connected, to educate them, to give them all the concepts, right? And education is really important part, because all these security concepts are common for us. We understand, we live and breathe on those. Every day we understand how product works. But customers sometimes not necessarily understand this technology, especially when Link is a kind of a new technology they bring on board, right? So education is a very, very important fact. So we make a statement that Link is secure by design, and that's our approach in the product. Everything started around 2002 when we delivered the product, delivered the paper called Trustworthy Computing, where Microsoft basically decides everything I'm going to do, and if I'm going to give a preference between the features, functions, and security, I'm going to concentrate on actually making products more secure. That's going to be our highest preference. So Link secure by design. That means when you install Link, first of all, security is completely embedded in tooling. You don't need to do anything to enable security. Encryption, server-to-server communication, server-to-client communications, all those communications are encrypted by default, right? No accounts are enabled by default. When you install Link, we don't have automatic default accounts enabled in a Link, right? You have to be admin to go and actually enable those stuff. No users are admin by default. You no need to be really Link admin. You need to be your domain admin to go and enable by some way to make someone to be able to then to log in and become an admin. External access is completely disabled by default. Federation is disabled by default. There are no kind of default pins of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for the IP phones and for users. If I created a user or I created a common area phone, I have to go and manually create a pin number for them so they can log in. And there are built-in limits for federation, which means if I enable federation and by mistake I've enabled open federation, that means I'm going to now federate to anyone that's going to come and discover my domain. We have some inbuilt limits inside the federation that actually will stop flow of thousands of messages coming and hitting your front end edge server, which means all these things are in a product when you define it, right? Now, next important element is comes Link as a front-end server communicates with various elements. It communicates with mediation server, it communicates with Exchange, it communicates with various different servers by default. We do not allow Link to communicate to anyone else, just there is a default settings. No, we have a CMS, we have to define in our topology what servers are trusted, we have to define them by the FQDN, we have to have a certificate in place, certificate have to be issued by trusted certificate authority, and if any of these elements actually are not matching, we will actually stop. We will not Link allow to communicate with that server by default, which means it will stop some rogue servers pretending to be some other servers and connecting into Link, right? We don't route this by default. And all these elements are inbuilt into the product by default. Also, we as a vendor, we encourage our partners that are working with us to develop connections to Link using a secure protocols. We strongly believe, as we said, no security through obscurity. We strongly believe that in order to make Link secure, we're not going to tell anyone what actually we do. No, that's not the case. If you go to the Microsoft Developer Network, you can see everything that we do, the protocols, all the definitions, everything is defined in MSDN. So that is where we encourage our partners, like Polycom, SNOM, AudioCode, Sonos, for them, they, when they use gateways, we encourage them to develop a security inbuilt protocol, and we also encourage them to communicate with Link in a secure fashion, right? This is all coming from us. So what we want to do, let's just have a look at some of the elements, actually, what we do as a Link user. We sign in, we use a voice, video, we do the IM, and this is the case where very, very oftenly we kind of underestimate the power, actually, of the knowledge. It's important to share the knowledge. It's important not to assume that our customers who are new to technology, they understand this by default, right? And so let's have a look what kind of security we have in every of the elements that comes into place, right? So first of all, you need to sign in. You fire up your link client, you put in your alice@kantoza.com, your credentials, and let's say you don't have anything manually configured, you rely on automatic discovery. What will happen? The client will basically, based on your SIP address, it will talk to DNS server, it will get the idea that you need to talk to this specific link pool, and then the client will connect to the pool, server will present certificate, and once client authenticated, client will establish a trusted encryption connection. Right. That's the first touch when you fire up a client. As you can see, a lot of things happening, and as a result, what you want, client to establish trusted encryption connection so you can start communicating. So before you even actually started exchanging all the signaling, what we do, we kind of establish, we call it the client trust model. If I put alice@kantoza.com, and if I leave a system into automatic discovery mode, there is no way the client's going to be looking at alice@noncontoso.com domain. It's specifically, we'll start looking to the very specific records like linkdiscover.contoso, linkdiscover internal, and it will start looking some SRV records. It's a predefined records that link client will go, and this is openly published. Those are not secrets. So once it actually finds out that's my, and this could be the same way you are internally located or you externally located, same story. You find out these are the actually environment you need to connect. You will try to actually talk to servers. Server will present your certificate. So again, before establishing a connection, it will do various cross checks like, is the server FQDN in the subject alternate names? Can I trust this actually certificate? Has this certificate been revoked by someone else? This all kind of cross checks will be done by the client itself before client says, well, you know what, I've discovered this is the right guy, his certificate makes sense to me, it is valid, it's not revoked, his name in a certificate, and then it will say, I now ready to communicate to that server and see what's actually gonna happen next. So now we need to authenticate. And the link client supports four type of authentication protocols. Kerberos, NTLM, TLS, DSK, and passive authentication. Now, I won't concentrate on Kerberos NTLM because it's been so much beaten topic and it's a kind of pretty stock standard. I would like to concentrate on TLS, DSK, and passive authentication because more and more actually we see we're having a discussion with our customers about TLS DSK and passive authentication. So what is a TLS DSK? It's a transport layer security. It's a certificate-based authentication. So every link front-end server is issuing every link client. Every link server issuing link user with a client certificate using a TLS DSK, this authentication protocol, upon successful authentication. It doesn't require any AD for further logging in. It's much easier, it's much faster protocol. Certificate can range from 8 hours to 365 days. As an administrator, you can specify this grace period. Now, the interesting point which you need to remember, if I'm a SIP user, and if I have got 5 devices, I will receive 5 client certificates from the front-end server. And now from each separate device, I will use my specific client certificate to actually logging in. We'll have a look a little bit later, actually, how it is happening. So that's the most important thing. It is turned on by default. Whenever you turn on Link, when you install it and let the user signing in, this actually process will take you in place. This will work. And I probably will want to give you a little bit of a topic. If you are installing Link 2010 on a Windows Server 2012 R2, you need to do a bit of registry change for TLS DSK certificates to be issued to users. There is an article on the TechNet because we've changed the way TLS DSK authentication works with 2012 R2 server. Don't forget to change that registry setting. Passive authentication. The concept of a passive authentication came probably mostly from the places where we have a lot of customers who have smart cards, who have got various form-based authentication. They're basically saying, I don't want Link to do any authentication. Me as a user, I sign to Link and I kind of want to authenticate to the front-end server, but front-end server will say, I don't know how to authenticate you, but I know who can. So that's a concept of passive authentication. If you hear, it's basically we define for passive authentication, we use Active Directory Federation services, which will be as a next hop considered for Link. And Active Directory front-end services then can give you form-based authentication, or then you can use STS server to do the smart card-based authentication and all these mechanisms, right? But to do that, to support that, you have to completely disable any authentication mechanisms on the Link itself. And the problem is, there are some limitations. In order to achieve your, let's say, you've got a lot of users, you're using a lot of smart cards for authentication, there are cases, I've got customers who are in that shape. They don't have a password, they've got a concept of smart cards. I can enable all these users, but it's a global level parameter, which means if I enable all my users to start authenticating, I'm in a trouble, because then everyone has to be going on that path. And as you now, Exchange and SharePoint, they do not support that kind of method, because Link client will then need to connect to Exchange to receive voicemail. All this information will be actually, all this capability will be broken. So you really kind of need to balance it when you enable this kind of authentication. So let's have a look what's happening in the background. Link client located outside. I specifically took outside. If he's inside, it's kind of going to be the same, because instead of going through reverse proxy and edge, you will be talking directly to the front-end server. So Link front-end server running two additional roles, which called web ticketing services and certificate provisioning web services. I, for this exercise, I kind of siloed them on a picture, but they are all the roles that running on a front-end server. So client will basically, let's say it's the first time he's signing in, it will send a sign-in request to the front-end server. Let's say it did the client trust, it knows this is server is correct, all certificates are correct, it's time for me to authenticate. It will kick the connect to the front-end server by age in this case, and it will say, I would like to connect to the front, I would like to basically sign in. And front-end server will send you, can you guys see it? Yes. It will can send you the authentication redirect, and it will say, you need a TLS DSK to be authenticated. And in case if you do not have a certificate, here's the URL for certificate provisioning services. Who can give you another certificate? Client will say, okay, I don't have a certificate. I need to know. I need to go and get a certificate. What will happen? Client will establish connection to certificate provisioning service, asking, I need a MEX document, and I need a, basically, I need a certificate. Please give me a certificate. And certificate provisioning server, it doesn't know how to authenticate the user. It will say, I don't know who you are, but actually I know who can validate you, who can authenticate you. So the certificate provisioning service will send back the message to the client asking, here's the basically web ticketing services. Can you please go to the web ticketing services and get a security token so I can trust you, I know who you are. Client will establish another connection to the web ticketing services, claiming the same, here's my MEX document, I'm this client trying to connect to the server. Certificate provisioning service told me to come to you. Please give me security token. So this is the time when the web ticketing server will ask you to authentication, and this is the time when you provide your username and password, your domain username password, right? So the web ticketing service will authenticate you against your Active Directory. So this is the time when you first time will use NTLM. After this NTLM, you will no need to do it anymore, because you will not get here. You will have, at the end of the process, certificate. Once you authenticate it against Active Directory, web ticketing service will give you the security token, and you will take the security token, will go back to the certificate provisioning server, and will say, here's a security token, you should trust me, you know who am I, give me that certificate, I need it. Once certificate provisioning server validates you, validates security token, it will do the following thing. It will take a certificate, will sign it, and give it to you, right, as a user. This is your client certificate. So every time you come from a different client, you will get a new certificate. Then it places this certificate into every web ticketing service, and also it will put you to the front-end server, and what's missing on the screen, SBA. If you have got SBA, Survival Branch Appliance, it will put it into SBA, because when wider network is down, SBA need to by some way authenticate you, because those client certificates are self-signed certificates, right? So SBA need a copy of it. So this is actually how we've made the Survival Branch Appliance. You survive in a branch when WAN is out, because SBA have a copy of your certificate, it actually can authenticate you. Once you have this client certificate, then you as a user, it's unlikely in this case you will present it. I've put this more for your reference case. So next time log in, instead when the Link server will ask you, I need a TLS DSK authentication, user basically will immediately present you the user certificate, client user certificate, and it will be authenticated, right? So the common practice shows that probably the first time your login is a little bit slower, because we don't want you to sit and wait until we issue you the client certificate, but we immediately authenticate you using NTLM and get you in, while in parallel we issue the client certificate. But next time when you come in, we basically will give you the client certificate. Now, very interesting case which we come across. Imagine a situation, you've got the deployment with the head office and the branch office, and let's say you everything is operational and the WAN is down. You know why they're a network, every user logging into Survival Branch Appliance, and they basically operating, receiving a telephone calls. Now, brand new employee, he came into the office first time and tried to sign in. Guess what? Will they log into the network or no? No, right? Because the SBA doesn't know how to authenticate it. So this is tip to remember. If there are new users going to come in, they really need to by some way get this user certificate, this whole process going, right? Is it clear, guys? This is very important. Now, if this is something new for you, if you haven't seen this process, if you don't know about this, this is happening every time you run a Link client, right? So be aware this kind of stuff goes. In contrast to this, what I would like to show you how actually the two-form authentication works. The whole concept of two-form authentication, it is another 2 hours of conversation. That's why I don't want to dig into that conversation, right? So, but let's have a look actually what is the difference. Again, client comes in, can I register? No, you need a TLS, you need to get to the certificate provisioning service. It will talk to certificate provisioning service. Certificate provisioning service will point you to the web ticketing service. And web ticketing service then will say, I don't know what to do with you. I don't know how to authenticate because all authentication has been turned off. So, but I know who can. So it will redirect you to the next hop. And this is where we say with Link 2013 as of today, your next hop have to be ADFS. So this is where the ADFS will basically send you request, hey, authenticate, which means on your laptop, you'll get a form-based authentication, please enter your credentials, whatever, put the smart card in. If you're on the mobile, you probably will get a Trident page, please enter your credentials. And basically, once it is authenticated, the ADFS service will return you the token. Once it returns you the token, then you see, you still need to go through the process to get a client certificate, which means then you take a token, go to the web ticketing service, get the security token, use the security token to get issued a client certificate. Very common question we've been asked by some of our customers, can I use my private certificate authority to issue the client certificates? No, you cannot. It is a part of the product and it has to be always. So although you've enabled ADFS, external authentication, we still use Link certificates actually to push this through, okay? And the rest will be the similar. Next time when you sign in, clients basically will say, here we go, you want to authenticate, here's my client certificate, you know who am I, and then you will be signing, and then signing process after that, it's much faster, okay? It's happened with every transaction, right? It is very important. So when your Link user is having some issues connecting, you really need to kind of understand those flows, and hopefully you download this, you'll have this flow, basically traffic flows with you that will help you to understand what's going on at the back. So I've discovered where that client is, I've discovered where the service is, I've authenticated, I'm successful, now I'll start communicating, right? I need to kind of do something, I need to get my contacts, I need to do what's happening. So we use a SIP as a protocol, and it's important to understand we use extensions to this protocol to do various things, right? We use SIP, which means I've authenticated and I've established encrypted channel back to the front-end server. It's a TLS encrypted channel. Across this encrypted channel, all my signaling will go as a client. Remember, it's completely encrypted channel. And my instant messages will be actually traveling across this encrypted channel, and I will receive initially my configuration from the front-end server, right? The mobile clients will do the SIP across HTTPS. They will not use SIP across TLS. It will be done across HTTPS, right? So what do I receive? We call this inbound provisioning. Whoever heard about inbound provisioning? Okay, inbound provisioning, that means when I sign in, front-end tells me, these are your policies. This is how you need to convert the numbers. This is what you can do. This is what can't you do, right? And that's only happened once at the beginning when you sign in. If I go 10 minutes later and change your profile and say, actually, now you can't do international calls, that update is not going to back to the client. We do not kind of do the refresh of the inbound provisioning. No, it's only happened when you sign in. So it is important to remember that if I'm going to disable you for international calling, I have to make sure I don't just change the policy. I also actually go and ask you to relog in actually to Link itself. You log off. You log on. Once you log on, authenticate it, establish a channel, you'll download all actually inbound information. It is very, very important. So also, you receive a link contact information through the inbound sign-in. And it's interesting that a lot of people are referring to a link contact card. There is no such a thing as a link contact card. Link keeps the contact information as list of the SIP URIs. If you ever done any migration of one environment to another, you bring the user, get his contacts as a bunch of SIP URIs and import them back, right? Link, basically, client will aggregate for you information from various sources and put into one area as a contact card, right? But as itself, the contacts is a list of URIs that we keep in the SQL database or in Exchange if you're using Exchange as a store for my contact information, right? So that information also initially will come back from across that secure channel you establish. Presence information, again, it is traveling across the secure channel. Anytime you're actually changing a presence, the client communicates with the server, it gets updates, and type of information, amount of information comes, really depends from what kind of presence privacy settings you have. Maybe I don't want to share information about my status. I just want some basic information. So you as a user can enforce that kind of policies, right? Address book is a little bit different service. Address book not necessarily coming inbound. There's a two ways address book can operate, and this is kind of happening immediately. You either can allow clients to download the address books, or you can allow basically over the HTTPS client to connect to address book services, which is running on the front-end server, and search them, right? Which means client is not downloading address book. More and more, I'm coming across cases where customers kind of turning on address book complete download because they don't want address book to kind of sit on the devices, but they're happy with those searches that's going back between the client and the front-end server, right? So I have established connection. I've downloaded all my policies. I've got my contacts. So what am I going to do? User needs Bob and Alice, Alice and Bob, needs to send an IM message. Let's see where the security is actually enforced. User basically across encrypted, I'm going to keep talking about it, but I want you to kind of reflect on it. It is encrypted SIP channel between a client and a server. It will send a message and will say, I need to talk to another user. The front-end server will find out that this user actually hanging at another pool. Now, front-end just doesn't go and talk to the server. There is an MTLS, mutual TLS session have to be established between two front-end servers. Again, they have to cross checks. Do I have the FQDN name of the server in the topology? Do I trust the kind of the root certificate? Do I have has the certificate been revoked? All these things will be cross-checked before servers establish that mutual TLS encrypted channel. And then the server from your left will push it to the right and say someone want to talk to the guy, and server will talk again across encrypted channel back to another user, will say someone want to talk. And we keep all instant messaging across that channel. There is no direct connection going between two clients whenever you do instant messaging. It is always going through the servers itself, right? And you as a you can when you apply, it goes through the same channel back and various things, right? You can store your conversation in archiving database or maybe in Exchange, or and you can have this conversation history on the client itself, right? This kind of activity happening, and as you can see, security is enforced and inbuilt in every element of this communication between client to server. It's been on the line, server to server, completely secure communications going between them, right? It is in basics for us. We know it, but not necessarily customers know it in every time. It's really important to address them and talk about those. So we had a chat, and now we decided to do a little bit more. We do voice, we do video, we do desktop sharing, we send some files together, right? Alice and Bob talk to each other. Basically, Alice places, let's say, audio or video call to Bob. Again, going back to reinforcing, it is a secure channel between Alice. All signaling will go through that secure channel, right? Alice will say, I really want to talk to Bob, I need to do the video. Session is established, it will go. The SRTP media, by default, it is SRTP. SRTP, which means it's a secure RTP. Voice and video will go between two clients directly, only with which condition? Can anyone say? Which one? Not. If they are routable between two IP addresses. If I can find the routes between two IP addresses, they will go. If they're not routable, what's going to happen? Come on. Which one? No? Kind of, H pool. Yes, that's right. It will go. Grab it. Sorry, I'm throwing it. It will go through the edge pool. Why? Because every time if you have edge in the topology, I stand, turn, I'll do candidate discovery, and I'll throw edge into my conversations. And again, all the sessions are secure. Now, I don't want to scare you a little bit. A lot of stuff happening. Please, msdn.com, have a look at the office protocols. SRTP, the way SRTP works between two clients, they get a master key generated for each client. Each client generates randomly session key. And using the session key, they encrypt and make it SRTP. Now, there are one separate session key for each direction, which means when I send to you, it is one session key. When I receive from you, I use a different session key. We're making really hard someone to break it and listen it, right? Except one case. If you are doing a conferencing, we use the protocol called SSRTP. And that SSRTP basically, everyone in a conference have one session key, which means front-end server encrypts everyone only once and just pushes this actually to everyone, right? That's the only difference. Oh, okay, let's keep going. I'm conscious of the time. If Bob decides to share the screen, again, signaling goes through completely encrypted channel, and he basically will encapsulate RDP into SRTP packets. And it basically will send directly if it can. If it can't send directly, it basically will put some edge in the middle, right? But remember, if you do RDP and you see SRTP packets, it is normal because we encapsulate RDP into SRTP. Same thing happening with a file share. If basically Alice decided to file share, again, separate session, through the negotiation channel, they will negotiate a separate session keys, and basically they will establish connection, encapsulate file share into the SRTP, and basically it will push it across. You see, if someone is doing it, try to go break it. How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You've got 6 session keys, right? Just to do these communications. So as you can see, every aspect of this, it is secure, and it is secure by default. Very commonly, we hear the request from customers coming, I want to disable security. Well, you kind of can. There is a command, but it's a global. If you set the global level, then nothing will be secure. Everything will be RTP, And as long as you understand the consequences, yeah, you can try it, right? So, from the user security perspective, you as a user has a kind of your controls where you will say, I don't want to answer automatically with audio. I don't want to answer automatically with video. So as a user, I don't want to accept the files immediately. If I'm transferring as a file, I can actually stop it in the middle. I can cancel it, right? As a user, you have those controls. There is nothing kind of automatic is happening. And also automatic from the admin security perspective, as an administrator, you can have the full control of, I don't allow you to desktop screen share. I don't allow you the file transfers, or even when you file transferring, I can control what kind of extensions you have and naming, etc. You can put these kind of filters, right? So those policies are in place and you can enforce those policies on the user basis. So let's say I've connected, I've logged in, validated, got my account, I do the IAM, and now I want to do the PSTN call. So user talks across secure channel to the front-end server, says, I want to place a number, there is a bit of routing will happen. Then user front-end server talks to the mediation server. Now, in most of the cases, mediation server is co-located. Some cases, it can be standalone mediation server. Then mediation server, again, all connections have done across secure channel. Mediation server, if it's a standalone, needs to have an FQDN defined in a topology. You say link doesn't just talk to any server. It needs to be defined, an MTLS session needs to be established. Then mediation server talks to the gateway. So this is a very interesting point. Some customer says, I can put TCP here between mediation server, and I'm okay with that. Well, and they come back and ask us, is that okay? Well, my response usually would be, depends where do you want to extend your trust boundary on the security level. If you want your security trust boundary to stop here, yes, you can do TCP. But if you would like to extend your security trust boundary right to the gateway, you actually can go and do the TLS session with the gateway, so all communications going right till the gateway are completely secure, right? Because the gateway to the public network is more than likely, 99% of the cases I come across, it is unsecure. It is open G7 11, or different kind of compression, whatever telco is using. But it's unsecure. Take it, decompress it, and listen it. So once the signaling is established, as you can see, client talks to the mediation server if there is no bypass, and then mediation server will push to the gateway, and the gateway will push to the unprotected ISDN world. I think the important conversations to have with customers here would be, where do I want to leave my security boundary? How much do I want to extend it? Most of the cases I've seen the gateway deployments done using TLS, so it's a kind of more or less complies what complete security environment you have, right? But again, there are choices you can deploy. From the conferencing perspective, again, conferencing has a variety of the modalities. You can have a front end, you usually present, you push voice and video, you can share the desktop, you can present the file, various things happening, right? So every time you do the conferencing, actually, I have a question. What is a conferencing? When communications will go to conference? Any idea? Yes. More than two parties, that's right. I don't know if I'm going to get there or not. Let's see. Oh, sorry. Okay. So, more than two party, it is considered conference. It sits on a server. Clients always talk to the conferencing server, right? When they do voice, it is completely, I'm kind of repeating, completely SRTP going to the server. When you want to present file, your file via HTTPS goes into the front-end server. Front-end server basically uploads the file into the file share. What it does, it encrypts the file and obfuscates the name, which means if you go to the file share, there's tons of files there. You won't even know which one you're actually dealing with. And when the web server, Office App Server, I assume you guys know what the Office Application Server is, when the web server wants to actually present that, it basically, it will ask front-end, give me security token, give me the session keys, give me encryption keys, I need to take a file and present, right? It will get the file from the share, I will basically decrypt it, and it's a bit of conversation will go between users and the web server before they get the right content, and of course, encrypted channels, they will receive a file. So As you can see, guys, going back. Every element, every step we participate, it is secure. It's either on the voice and video, SRTP, it's either when we're taking, putting files, we encrypt them, we change the name. Everything is secured. Very commonly, we have our customers asking basically questions about, what do I do? How can I have my secure conferences? It is nothing to do with the kind of link itself. It depends on you, right? You can define the policies. You can say, I only want to create conferencing where only domain users can have, or maybe me and federated. So you need to create your policies, and it is in the admins and the users' capabilities there to basically be a little bit more creative and have an options to create various conferencing types. You can have conferencing roles. You can say only organizers can present or anyone can present. Lobby, you can get anyone coming in into the lobby, and then you can validate, get someone in. And as you know, I hope everyone have used Link Client and know how to run conferencing, right? Has anyone doesn't know how to create custom conferencing? Please come and see me after this. I'm more than happy to show you guys. And a very, very common question I've been asked by my customers, how long do we keep the files on a file share? By default, it's 15 days. But again, don't forget, this is not just a file with a full name, like company shareholder results, how much money we pay for them, .doc document sits there. It is encrypted, it is obfuscated, we're gonna keep it for 15 days. If you believe you need to have much tighter security, put it to retention date to 1 day, right? It's up to you to decide how you would like to have it. So, once you try to use Link externally, this is one of the benefits, right, of Link. You have Link, you have capability to take Link, go outside, and practically has zero loss functionality. You can do voice, video, you can share, you run your conferencing. You are still connected, right? So I'll go through some of the basics again. Sign in, it is encrypted channel. We validate the name of the servers we connect, make sure the name is in the certificate. Certificate is trusted and it's not revoked, right? We establish a connection, we say, I want to log in, and then through the edge, we'll log in back. Once we authenticate it, we'll be presented with our inbound provisioning, whatever stuff we can do. Very interesting point, edge does not authenticate users. Very common question, people get worried, should I put edge and reverse proxy into my domain? And we kind of saying, you don't need to put them into domain because this is your DMZ. There's no clear guidelines for us. They have to be? No, we don't recommend. Some customers actually make them member of domain because they want the patches and updates kind of push through the central system, but you don't have to, right? Because they do not participate in any of the user authentication. And I assume you guys understand what this edge and what reverse proxy and what kind of roles are there, right? If you don't know if some of the confusion is there, please, after the session, I'll stay here and I'm happy to go through this with you guys. So once you sign in using an edge has a three role. It's an access edge where I sign in and I do all my instant messaging. There is a web edge where basically I get some of my content from the conferencing, and there is a AV edge. It's basically my voice and video processing engine that sits on the edge, right? If I need to do some downloading of the Office web access server actually can be mapped via reverse proxy, and I get my files through that. I need to do address book searches, I need to do the meeting content, or I need to do device uploads updates for my IP phones. I need a reverse proxy. Reverse proxy basically will sit there. The main role is it map the front-end external web services to your external world, right? Front-end has two web services, two kind of faces. It's internal web services and external. External web services using reverse proxy are mapped to the client. Now, very common question we've been asked here, I'm a little bit worried about reverse proxy because it's a kind of, I'm isolating my two servers in DMZ, but reverse proxy is really, whatever it's getting on the URLs is directly into my front-end. Yes, it's a valid ask, but you really kind of need to understand that the web services on the front-end server, they've got only very, very limited services from the connection perspective. They will terminate and connect, but they will not be able to take over the server and then start going back to your Active Directory and starting doing RDPs, right? They specifically lock down. What we even more recommend, because by default they will run under the network services, by default we actually recommend you to change to the very specific Kerberos accounts to run those on the web services, on the front end, so you even lock down further on what kind of stuff you can do on your front end when they are mapped to the reverse proxy. So basically, you will need those two. And if you're gonna be doing voice, very common kind of mistake, security team doesn't allow your internal clients to talk to the edge via internal interface. It's not outbound connection, it's a kind of inbound connection. It's the edge, the one that initiates. And for edge session, it's another 2 hours to talk because edge, although it sits in the DMZ, it doesn't authenticate any of the customers, but it still issues some temporary credentials for users to kind of authenticate some of the sessions that's coming in, right? So there's a lot of security inbuilt. As you can see, I log in, I push the voice, I push the video, I do various things. Now, what I would like to do next couple of slides, I would like to go through some of the interesting points that we've seen so far, what our customers have done, not necessarily what we have actually advised them to do, but it's good to kind of have a good conversation, and this is very common topics for us to talk. Common perception number one. People think if I'm going to put a director in front of my front-end server, at least I'm going to isolate the DDoS attacks. When users basically will try to sign in, I can generate a client, will be automatically signing into the front end. I can do the DDoS attack with a request to sign in on authenticate, and basically I can flood the server. So instead of flooding this server, I'll better flood the director. Well, it's not really that kind of capability, it's adding the value, because these days the Link 2013 client, they not necessarily need to come to the access edge. First thing, when the Link client sign in, it looks for the link discover internal link discover URLs. And those URLs will hit you to the reverse proxy and will lend you to the link pool to say, I'm user A, give me anything I need to know so I can go and log in, right? So really adding a director, not necessarily adding you some values. Remote access through VPN. Yes, there is a perception. Some people will say, all our policies dictate, if you are a remote user, you have to come to VPN. Great, very nice. You're gonna miss some of the functionality. There's no capability to have a mobile users, and there is no capability to have external conferences, external parties, and federation. Plus, more important, none of the VPN concentrators in the world have been designed with the capability to handle real-time traffic. VPN concentrators don't know. Is it voice coming? Is it video coming? I have to prioritize. So, you will lose functionality, plus your voice and video sessions will be affected. They will be to a certain degree, and it all will depend on how busy is the VPN concentrator, right? So my recommendation is really, let's go and talk to the security guys, understand why they are forcing everyone to go. Maybe we can do split tunnel. Let's understand what are their concerns. Because in the end of the day, people force everyone to the VPN concentrators because I want to authenticate, and I want to actually secure my communications. Isn't it what we do? We authenticate you, and we actually secure our connections, right? That's kind of conversations we need to have with those guys. Corporate users. We have very common misconception, kind of request where they say, all my corporate users are going to be using a link, and I'm going to turn off auto-discovery. They have to come through the VPN, and I will use my dedicated edge segment with reverse proxy to go and talk to my conferencing. Well, it's a kind of working in a part because your mobility is not gonna work, number one. Your VPN users gonna be affected because they're gonna come through the VPN concentrators, voice and video will be affected. And then it is really hard for you to stop users kind of poking around and understanding you can grab any mobile is not going to work, but Edge is still published, and how are you going to maintain consistent policy, right? It is a very, very complex thing to do. Again, to address this and to help this, the only way we find is go back to security team and let's have a discussion. Why do you force those guys to come through the VPN concentrator? What are your security concerns? And let us tell you how actually we can address those. And actually, I've got good message for you. If you are a partner or we Microsoft, this is not the battle we're gonna win. We need to help our customer security team to understand the capability. And in the end of the day, it is the security team and the business needs to come to that good balance of what do they get and what do they lose, right? This is not our battle to fight. This is us educating customer that they can take a technology and adopt it. And another option was some customers wanted to have kind of a private edge and a public edge. And the way they go to private edge, they actually put a private certificate because no one is gonna kind of trust them. And I'm gonna have a public users for conferencing user public. Now, the bad news is once you start, maybe you can make a working for IAM presence, but when you start doing a voice, there is no way actually you can force client to go through the private edge on the voice side, right? You'll have all sorts of errors coming in. Again, consistent message. Let's go back and understand why you're doing this stuff. What are your concerns? And let me explain you actually what kind of security mechanism we have inbuilt. Third-party MSPL scripts, very common concept where you can use either you write by yourselves or you can use some products that actually will sit on top of, for example, Edge server and basically will look at the incoming traffic and will filter various DDoS attacks, re-authentication requests. Again, these are not Microsoft products. These are the third-party products like Link Solutions. We can't say it's a right or wrong, right? This is a solution that addresses your needs, but similar message, we need to go back and understand what actually they're trying to achieve and what kind of problems they have. For those who don't know, what is MSPL? Do you know what MSPL is? Okay, MSPL is Microsoft C for Programming Language. When we created the front end, we basically created a scripting capability on every front end. It is kind of a part of a runtime. You basically upload your script and the system compiles and put into the system. It's designed to be very lightning and fast. It sits right on the level where it will intercept your SIP messages coming in, and you can do various enforcements. For example, you can write a script and say, anytime Vakhtang sends invite message, drop it, right? It's not designed to go and kind of do various lookups. No, it should be very quick, random things to do. Now, it's a good tool. If you're dealing with Link, I can tell you, Link can have two directory numbers, or Link can have two tail URIs. I've done it if you write MSPL script, but the danger of MSPL is not the fact is how do I maintain. The danger of MSPL, I can write the script, but how it's gonna affect performance of my server? Is it gonna make it busy? Is it gonna kill it? Because it kind of sits on the runtime level. It intercepts practically every invite message, right? But it's doable. That's where some of the solutions are built around. So to summarize, the world is changing. The security policies really need to address how the world is changing. You need to go back. You need to talk to those guys. Make security guys part of your not necessary first or second or third meeting, right? Give them a knowledge, do the whiteboard sessions with them, explain them how the protocol works. Gear yourselves up for at least 4 meetings with the security people. You need basically push the message across that it is actually the product. There's a lot of inbuilt security, a lot of capability. And the most important thing is every time you come across very specific situation, pain, or something that's stopping you deploy or implement or sell, please give us a feedback because we've got a very good, we call it Skype Experience Engine. That's what we internally use Microsoft. We collect actually responses. We collect the feedback and actually we push it back directly into the product guys, into developer. We actually can make a difference. We actually can feed them back and say, those are kind of stuff our customers are requiring. So we would like to basically you to do the product, do the changes. And this has actually happened. If you have been dealing with Link 2010, you can say, call pick up. It wasn't actually part of the product. we have built a case, and we had initiative was actually coming out of Australia. We basically collected the thoughts and customer experience of Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and Korea. We had a very strong feedback for the product group, and call pickup group actually was created as one of the cumulative updates. So it's doable. It's not just a one channel you throw and don't see anything coming back. So it is all doable, right? So I would say, look, don't forget to take evaluations. We really, really would like to see your feedback. We'd like to alter and work on more specific topics that you would like us to present. And I would probably open now to the sessions. I've got heaps of giveaways to go. Hold on, I have to figure out how to turn this on. Yes. Hold on.
So you said that the file store is encrypted as well as all communications by default because you've got the security by default built in. I was just wondering about logs, like IM logs and stuff. Are those also encrypted or are they in plain text when they're in storage?
The logs are sitting in a SQL database, and it's up to your process what you want to do with the SQL database. You will see in the documents you download, in a presentation, there is a separate slide in additional element which we talk about SQL, what we do. We say Link uses SQL. We do not encrypt everything in a SQL by default. It's your practices. You need to work with your SQL guys. What is the, they not encrypted. They are in a SQL database. But you need to talk to them and see if you want to encrypt that. Yeah.
Link mobility. I've had issues with deploying Link mobility internally and getting the external certificate, the internal certificate to the devices. Link Mobile uses the Link Discover internal and Link Discover addresses. What should they be pointing to in the internal network for wireless?
That's a very good question. With Link Mobility, you always have Link Mobiles goes into the DMZ and always kind of hits your external web services URL, right? You can make Link Mobile work on internal web services, but you have to kind of disable it. It's either one or another. So you can say, I want my mobiles to use on internal Wi-Fis without kind of going outside into DMZ comeback, but you have to turn it off, external services. But all Discover, you should discover mobility URL, but you have to make sure they will point to your external address.
Does that affect the internal
client? No. You will... Link Discover will talk to the front end, and front end will return you the mobility URL. And you need to make sure it will when it returns your mobility URL, it's going to be external web services URL. Okay? Thank you. Yes?
Just a quick one. If you're using Office 365 version of Link, and if you have one person sending a file to another person, it doesn't go through the servers, so that file is not stored on the servers?
Okay, it's going back to the point if I'm using Office 365 or Link, it's irrelevant. It's up to the point of, if I can route between two IPs, I'll go directly. If I don't route between two IPs, I'll will go through the edge because that path will be likely through the candidate discovery, they will find the best path between them. No, it's between clients. Yes.
Thanks. So I've got a question around call recording. So in an environment where you've got secure media, you've got secure RTP flowing, call recording, compliance, PCI, all that stuff's happening in the background, right? How does secure voice and secure RTP work when you've got a call recording solution in flow? So how do you break into that media if you like to call record it? Yeah.
There's two ways, as I call it. They're going to kill me for this. There's a traditional way and untraditional way. The traditional way is basically you place Verba or Nice on one of those guys, and they will they do everything that we say we do untraditionally. They will intercept the SDP messages because remember, every time two guys talk to each other, the session keys, the master keys, they all exchanged via the encrypted SDP session. So the recorders will basically intercept SDP, they will pick up a session key, and when they take the RTP going, they will decrypt it. Now, untraditional, you can intercept if you're in the control of the front end, pick up a certificate. It's much, much harder, but this is what literally the vendors like they're doing. They're picking all the session keys. Questions? Okay, yes.
Do you have to open up the RDP ports to do remote desktop sharing?
You no need to open up RDP ports if you do remote desktop sharing, because you remember, if you are externally, you will be talking to Edge, and you are intercepting, encrypting everything and putting into SRTP. So Edge will think you're just doing another voice call, but in that voice call, you're gonna have, it's just another flow of SRTP packets. So you're gonna go through the Edge, and if you enabled on the Edge 443 or 3478, that's gonna be the path.
Just on your slide, you mentioned that mobile devices wasn't recommended for the VPN option. Mobile devices now have built-in VPN, so I'm not understanding what the difference is. If you've got the Link client sitting on top, like, what exactly are you losing? Why is it discouraged?
It's not a problem of Link or mobile, or it's a problem of VPN concentrator. First of all, you have IPsec. Okay, it's a bit of pain. It's an encryption. You're encrypting already encrypted, okay? It adds you a bit of overhead. Okay, that overhead may be 20 milliseconds of delay. Maybe if it's a lightning fast network, you may cope with that. But the problem is, on top of encryption, the way the VPN concentrator works, the default is a FIFO queuing. First in, first out. And if you have got someone downloading tons of stuff from the internet, you're stuck behind the larger packets in the smaller queues. It's a VPN concentrator, don't have any concepts of what I can do. That's exactly. It's a performance thing. You can do security, that's fine, but what we're saying, why do you do VPN? This is kind of going and asking customer the question, why, until you're fully satisfied. Why do you VPN? Because you want to authenticate, you want to secure. We can go through days and days talking with them about how secure we are and how we actually do. Maybe actually doing a split tunneling is a better option. Another case could be if customer says, you know what, to enable split tunnel, I need another 6 months projects. That's different. That's okay. But you can say, this is the case, right? We may say we start working with VPN. I can manage the fact is users may have a problem, but I know there is a light at the end of the tunnel I'm working towards. But what I'm saying, don't let them to go and say, I'm going to sit on a VPN, because eventually, if it's not working, well, what's users going to do? They're going to stop using it. That's what we're aiming to, right? Yes.
Coming through?
Yep.
Does the location of the security boundary impact on the reporting you get, like with the call quality monitoring? So if you put it too far out, sort of past the PSTN, does the reporting rely on that being secure? And then if it's not, you don't get that back in the reports?
No. Your back-end reports will come from every element that related to Link. So let's say you have got, you're placing a call. You as a client who is engaged in the path is a client, mediation server, gateway, and a PSTN, right? So it doesn't matter how much deep you put security boundary, your call reporting is going to be generated by you and mediation server. And gateway, no matter your TLS or TCP, is not going to generate those records, right? So it doesn't matter where you go.
You know I've got a question that stumps you, so I'm not even going to go there.
Do I go get for bigger, better freebie?
A question about today's presentation. In regards to the client certificates for the per client, are they automatically copied across to the paired pools in the event of a paired pool failover? or that when during a failover event does a client need to re-authenticate?
I have to come back to you. I assume it is yes. I run out of this. Come to Plantron. Oh, no, it's here.
So the question is,
if I have a paired pool, will they be copied? They should. Look, the backup process, if you go to the HA mode, right? What makes you high available, it makes the backup process that takes all the whatever nitty-gritties there and pushes across, right? The backup process does not copy certificates. I need to come back to, if you give me your contact details, I'll come back to you, but it's a damn good question.
I'm glad it's annoying you about 2013 VDI.
Oh, okay. All right, got it. Any more questions? Yes. Hold on. This guy was quicker.
It's just regarding the sign-on when the certificate is issued to the client. So the next time the client signs in, it just presents that certificate.
No. What will happen, client will sign in, normally will say, I want to sign in, and server by default will return 401, will say, you need to authenticate with TLS DSK. Right. If client has certificate, will say, here's my certificate, and you are in.
Okay. What happens in the event that the user account has been disabled since that certificate was presented? The next time the
That's a good question. This is a very common misconception. If I disable user in Active Directory, and actually this is the tricks I showed to some customers, I can go and disable in Active Directory users, and if I haven't removed the client certificate from front-end server, client still signs in. So when you remove the user from front-end, you have to actually, when you remove user from organization, you don't just remove it from AD, you go to the front-end, and you have to remove. When you remove user from front end, it takes and revokes all certificates. Or you can go to the command line or to the control panel, can say, this is the user, revoke all certificates. So it will revoke all certificates issued to the user. That's very important.
Yeah. My question is, what are some of the security risks with Federation connections with other companies?
Federation, look, there's a slide in deck which says what actually is happening. Similar way, there's a three modes of federation you have. It's open federation, which means I trust anyone. Even with trust anyone, you still need to have valid records in a DNS system, because if you don't have valid SIP federation TLS records, I won't establish connection to you. It needs to give me proper certificate. I trust the root. It's not basically revoked. You need to have the certificate in a subject alternate name. So the federation servers will establish that session, but there's a lot of cross-checks will happen. And then when you communicate a cross-federated connection, it's all similar way. It's a secure, it is point-to-point, but if me and you are federated, and if, let's say, all communications for instant messages goes through the edges, but if we kick in voice, if our clients will find a better route locally, voice will go between us, but crypto keys, session keys, will be negotiated through encrypted channel. We'll agree on the keys, and then we'll do SRTP directly, right? That's an open federation. Closed federation, I see a lot of customers going now where you specifically, explicitly define, these are the domains I want to federate, and these are the edge servers I want to go for, right? Again, it is your choice, because you put FQDN of the access edge server, you put domain, and if someone is hijacked server, you see, you need to hijack a server, you need to put his name, you need to bring his certificate, you need to put subject alternate name, and if someone doing all this stuff and you have no idea what's going on in your business, I think you probably have a bigger problem. And slide, please refer to the slides, we've got some slides. Thank you. Any more questions? Oh, coming.
Just as a follow-up to the one that was over here, so if you're using Office 365, is it best to actually then, as a procedure, to go in and disable the link abilities for the clients before you delete them out of the system?
Office 365 is a little bit different, because when you enable client in the Office 365, they get certificates by default.
Yeah. someone out so that you want them to no longer have access, is it best to go and remove link access and then delete them from...
You remove the link as user, disabling for link, and it will remove all certificates.
Yeah, okay.
Now, it's a tricky thing. I don't think so there is an option in Office 365 and say, remove his client certificates.
No,
it's
that's
not
what
there.
I was wondering, yeah.
It's not there. And if you go to the command shell, command line, because you can remote PowerShelling to link online, be careful. There's not too many options available there.
Just delete all.
Here we go. Thank you. Sorry, I ran out of previews. But if you want to go to Plantronics stand and say, Vakhtang told you to give them something, they'll give you. Any questions more? Yes.
Decent blogs or anything for somebody who's trying to learn how to...
Myself?
Yeah,
Office blogs. There's a next hop, I think, is moved there. There's a lot of stuff is there available. Guys, I probably we're running out of time. I would say I won't take on this air. I'm happy to stay here and let's just take it off the air, the questions. Okay, thank you.